Well, good morning. I guess we are back in order here. We are on Chapter 12, The Discovery of the Self, from the book A Parenthesis in Eternity by Joel Goldsmith. And this is the first part, which is called The Circle of Eternity. After today's talk, we will enter into the second part next week, which is called Rising Out of the Parenthesis. All right, so this is Chapter 12, The Discovery of the Self. Obviously, it's a capital S self. There were a few things in here. This was like that other chapter. There was not a whole lot that grabbed my attention, but there were some things. Nothing can establish permanent peace in the heart of an individual except the entrance into that heart of the Christ, the Spirit of God. So, he's saying that you will never have the peace that passes understanding until Christ has entered in. And Christ here, he says, is the Spirit of God. By the Spirit of God functioning as the consciousness of man, are you saved? When we become aware of this invisible transcendental presence as our self, capital S, self, in that moment does it begin to function in our experience, and not before. You have to be aware of it to function in your experience. And we've been over this principle, and it is a principle. What you fill your consciousness with is what you will see manifested in your life or around you, in life in general. And when I held to the belief, this is metaphysically speaking, when I held to the belief that I was going to have a Dodge Caravan, because I was working with kids and I needed a lot of seats, well, I manifested a Dodge Caravan, and I enjoyed it. But that's not what this is all about. It's not about manifesting what you want as a person. What you want as a person, you're supposed to be ceasing from. We reach the place where we're ready to go higher. And in order to go higher, in order to rise out of the parenthesis, we have to know our real self by experience. Hence all the emphasis by Joel on spiritual experience. Now this next line is right out of Joel's mouth. I've been saying it for years, but I don't think we really take a deep look at it. Joel says, spiritual man has never left his father's house, and house is consciousness, and consciousness is kingdom. You've never left the kingdom of heaven. You're there now. But unless you see it, unless you feel it, you won't manifest it, you won't see it. If you feel it, then you'll know it, and it'll manifest. And you'll say, yes, I really am in the kingdom, and isn't it wonderful, Father? But if you don't see it, you won't know it, and you won't manifest it. You'll just read it and say, spiritual man has never left his father's house. Isn't that nice? And then you'll go grocery shopping and forget all about it. Just as there is no fallen man, in the sense of God's man falling into a state of mortality, so it would be equally impossible for mortality ever to rise into immortality and become a child of God. Now that's something we don't like to hear too much, is it? You, sitting in a chair, 5'8", 5'5", 5'7", 6 feet or above, you cannot rise out of the parenthesis. Why, you say, I study, I pray, I meditate. Yes, you do. You study, you pray, you meditate. You haven't come to the place yet where you turn your meditation over to Christ, over to Spirit. And the Spirit meditates within you. When that happens, you'll receive impartations from your self, capital S, self. He says, to know our true identity destroys the mortal sense of existence. But it's the knowing as we just described, not knowing with your mind. That doesn't do anything except maybe entertain you while you're picking out the best strawberries. It requires rising to a higher altitude of understanding, recognizing the laws of spirit, and letting the sense of mortality drop away. That's what it does. It drops away. You don't force it away. It's not like fighting a... Let's say you're trying to quit smoking and you're fighting having a cigarette. And you're fighting it in the morning and fighting it in the evening. Fighting it in the middle of the night. You're fighting. You're trying to force yourself not to have a cigarette. This is not that. You can't force yourself to get rid of yourself. But if you are involved in meditation, which is a higher altitude of understanding than thinking, then you will know yourself. Your true self will impart itself to you. We call it the still small voice, or the thunder of silence, or just an impartation. It's different from a regular thought, and I don't know how to describe it to you. I don't know how to describe its difference. I mean, if I did, you probably wouldn't be able to get it, because you'd be trying to get what it is to me, and you need to get what it is to you. It's different from thinking, but it's still a knowing. That's all I can say. Mortal sense and mortal creation have no part in God, never have had, and cannot be returned to God. He's beating that principle home. Mortality will never rise into immortality. You must put off mortality. He says, mystical wisdom does not teach that a mortal is to become immortal, but that he must die daily and be reborn of the spirit. That is, he must awaken to the awareness of his true identity. And just as he would drop any illusion, so he must drop, once and for all time, the belief that he is a fallen man or a human being. This is a most difficult path that we have chosen, or that I should say has chosen us, because I really believe it chooses us at a certain point. And it's a most difficult path because it's such a fine line. There are things you can't explain them as black or white. There are many shades of gray, and I won't say 50 shades, okay? But there are many shades of gray where thinking suddenly stops and there's a higher level of knowing. Joel describes it as feeling. We feel that infinite immortal self, our true identity. We feel spirit. And I like that too. That's how it is for me. I feel the presence. And I know it's just a micro dot out of infinity. But I know that that presence I'm feeling is that infinity. But that's a different knowing. I didn't think that up. I didn't read it in a book. Joel says, ultimately, we shall all discover that our true identity is Christ. And that's something to meditate on, isn't it? My true identity is Christ. Well, what is Christ? What do I know about Christ? Joel says you can't explain Christ, and he's right. It's an experience. But when you experience, then you're left with the, aha, that's what it is. Then you know by experience. He says, in the moment that this truth is revealed to us, all that has been imposed upon us by human belief will drop away. And as soon as we begin to perceive our true nature and our true identity, it will not take long to become accustomed to the atmosphere of spirit, which is our original abiding place. I called Herb about that one time. I was on the job, and I had one of those quick 2-minute meditations that Joel recommends, and I experienced spirit right there on the job, and with it came this feeling of an atmosphere surrounding me, surrounding everything. And I called Herb and I said, do you ever get that feeling there's an atmosphere? And he said, sure, yes. And he told me some other experiences. And so when it says we become accustomed to the atmosphere of spirit, this again is a real experience. These are not just words. Joel didn't think this up. In fact, he probably didn't even write it. He probably spoke it. And something you have to know about these books, each audience that he spoke to was at a different level. Some audiences would draw out more of the metaphysical. Some would draw out the purely mystical. And then you have an editor. The editor sometimes didn't understand. And so she edited things out that should have been left in. And I've seen that in a couple places. All right, so he says, oh, I wanted to make one other point here. He says the human belief will drop away. Yes, but it doesn't all drop away at once. It can. It dropped away from me in 1973. And I walked around for about a month with no ego. No sense of a personal sense. I was watching, I was beholding, I was witnessing as Christ was living my life. And it was wonderful. But it wasn't permanent. It was sort of a preview of things to come. And so it dissipated, and I had to get to work to make it a permanent thing. So, each meditation that you have, I wanted to say Buddha, as we know, had the experience, the deep experience in meditation under the Bodhi tree, where he became completely enlightened and it never left. So it can happen. It happens that way most often if you have a master and you're part of the master's mandalay or disciples, and he can give you enlightenment. He can help you come to enlightenment within yourself. But for most of us, every time we go into meditation, some part of humanhood will drop away. And it can be something as simple as, oh, I thought I had to do something in a certain way, and I found out that I don't, because God really does go before me and make the crooked places straight. And so a little bit of human will and human willpower drops away. And then over the years, a lot of it has dropped away. Okay? So just because you don't have complete enlightenment with your next meditation doesn't mean you're not making progress on this path. So he says, let us in this moment do away with the belief of being that fallen man who in some way or other has to struggle back to the kingdom of God, and let us realize here and now I and the Father are one. Now that I that's one with the Father is your true identity. And we can even go so far as to say I am the Father. Okay? I is God. I is Christ within you. Ever one with the Father, because it's the Father's expression. It's invisible and incorporeal. The Father's expression is invisible and incorporeal. It's not material. It doesn't have structure. It's spirit. It's everywhere present. It's more of a substance, an invisible substance, than it is a thing. So I and the Father are one. The Father is spirit, and I am the offspring of that spirit. Therefore, I am spirit or spiritual. I am of the household of God, under the dominion of God, joint heir to all the heavenly riches by virtue of the Spirit of God that dwells in me. Okay, so that's his little 2-minute meditation. And afterwards, remember, you're not done with the last word. After your little 2 minutes of talking or thinking or knowing truth, then you become still. You stand still, you stop, and listen. Because the purpose for meditation is to hear that still small voice. The purpose for meditation is to feel that omnipresence, and to lean back into it and rest into it as the everlasting arms. We have never left the kingdom of God. So there it is, outright in black and white. If we've never left it, we're in it now. We have never left the jurisdiction and government of God. We have never come under any law but the law of God, and have never lived any life but the life of God. God life is the life of all being. And there never has been any other. Well, if that was a truth that we were knowing and feeling, we could put the books down and put the talks down and go away and live it, right? Or go away and let it live itself where we appear to be. But we don't get it in one fell swoop, so we have to keep studying. Now, again, I go to my friend from India who feels that since it's all an illusion, why bother? We'll wake up when we wake up. Let's just have fun. Well, that's not true. It's all an illusion is not out here. And that's where he has it, out here. This out here is all an illusion. But no illusion can ever be externalized, because we're standing in the kingdom. but we're swimming in our mind, which is where the illusion is. So, we do need to work, we do need to study, we do need to rise out of this parenthesis. And it doesn't just happen. We have to take the principles and practice them until more and more parts of humanhood fall away, drop away. Okay, so he says, so we enter the fourth dimension of life. He says, it was our birthright, and it is ours now because the kingdom of God cannot be restricted or limited, nor remain forever hidden. We do not have to fight our way back to God. That's right, we don't have to. You can't take heaven by force. I tell my adopted daughter, I tell her, if you have to force it, it's wrong. Because I see her forcing a screw in it with a screwdriver and then it breaks off. Or I see her forcing something that she's cooking and it doesn't come out right. And so I tell her, if you have to force it, it's wrong. And that's a principle for me. And it's true also with bodies. If you have to force something, you're going to pay a price. That's the way the body works. Ah, but what about the truth of being? We don't care how the body works, since that is a concept which is an illusion. Does the principle still work? Yes, it does. Because if you have to force your way into the kingdom, you're not going to be resting. And so what you're going to feel will not be the real, your real identity. It'll be something that the ego has come up with to mimic yourself. So, you can't force your way into the kingdom. We do not have to fight our way back to God. We do not have to find God. We only have to open our consciousness in the assurance that God could never lose us. How could God lose His self? His self is our self, for there is but one self. So there you have it. Joel is saying, God is your one self. He says that a lot, doesn't he? All you have to do is open consciousness. Well, now, if I was going to ask you that, that's something else that you could meditate on. That's a cone, a K-O-A-N. Take it back to your room. That's what the Zen masters used to give their students, a cone. Go meditate on this. So this is your cone for this week. How do you open consciousness? And if I asked you that, what would you say? Jill, how do you open consciousness? John, how do you open consciousness? What would you say? Because he says that's all you have to do. Christ says the same thing. I stand at the door and knock. I stand at the door of your consciousness and knock. And if you will open, I will come in and sup with you. And you'll go in and out and find pasture. So, how do you open that door? How do you open your consciousness? Joel says your selfhood is the unconditioned self. So is my selfhood. It is wholly spiritual. It is, in fact, spirit itself. So, your self, he just said, is spirit, which has no race, no nationality, and no religion. this selfhood of you and of me coexist with God, has coexisted with God in the isness which God is, without beginning and without ending, and this selfhood has known individual expression throughout all time. So you have a self that never had a beginning. I know we think of eternal life as moving ahead there towards the future, and it'll never end. But now let's look backwards, too, from where we came from. And guess what? If we look backwards to the very beginning, there isn't one. We never had a beginning. That's what he just said. Without beginning and without ending. So it's just as infinite behind you as it is in front of you. You are that eternal life. To accept intellectually the truth that we are that unconditioned self is one thing. Ah, but to experience it in a measure is another thing. And to experience it in its completeness is quite another. So, we know from Joel's instruction and from Christ's that we have to open consciousness. And we know from John, the Revelator, that when we open consciousness and receive Him, we become the sons of God, or the Son of God, the manifestation of God. This realization of ourself enables us either to surrender this present incarnation or to remain in it, and yet not be of it or conditioned by it, but to live always as the Self, capital S. He says, if we are to find the kingdom, therefore we shall have to seek inside to find it, for that is where it is. And if we wish to show our love for God, we shall have to express love to one another, because that is where we will find God to love. If we want to serve God, we had better learn to serve one another, because only in that way can we serve the Father that sent you and sent me into expression. So, when I asked God to teach me how to love, so many years ago, He took the only people I loved, my wife and my child. They ran off with another man. And I turned to God and said, this is what you do when I ask you how to love? You take the only things I love about life? I was broken up. I was in pieces. I couldn't hardly think. I couldn't work. I couldn't eat. I couldn't function. Then came my spiritual teacher. He came to my rescue and he said, Bill, most people would get out of this by turning their love over to another woman. But if you did that, you would be just as dependent on the next one, because this isn't love, this is dependency. You're depending on her to make you happy. He said, the only way you can get out of this is to transfer your love to God. Well, I said, how do you do that? And Don said, I'm not going to tell you. Go read. See if you can find the chapter in the book, The Art of Meditation. So I took that book down and I read the chapter, For Love is of God. And in that chapter I read, the only way we can love God is by loving His creation. For God and His creation are one. And right there with the book open in my lap, I made the decision that I would love God by loving you. That's where all this started. And I practiced it. There was no one there by my... I lived by myself. There was no one there, so I spoke out loud. These thoughts, these human thoughts would come, oh, why don't you call her up? Why don't you go up and get her back? And all that. And I interrupted them. This is the dying daily that we were talking about before. And I said, Father, show me how I can love. How can I be of service? And give me the power to carry that out. And I started having these opportunities. Ray dropped by the house and he had some problems he wanted to discuss. And we talked about them and his problems were met. The solutions came out right there while we were talking. And what happened over the next 30 days was, although I started out pretending I was serving God, well, that was the time period when I was sitting in my meditation chair with a copy of Practicing the Presence, and I set it down and got quiet and closed my eyes. And that was the first time I consciously felt the living presence of God. It just touched me on the side of the arm, and there was a tingling, and I felt it just through my being, and the sense of peace that came with it. And I knew that that was the presence. And I probably called Don and said, wow, Don, this is fantastic. And so I fell in love with that presence. And I fell in love with loving that presence inside of you. It's the reason I make these talks, is because I love the presence inside of you. And I can't help but do it. And for no other reason. I asked God one time, God, what can I give you? You have everything. And the answer came, you can give me yourself. How can I do that? Well, I can do something for you at least every Sunday, right? And here we are. So, says Joel, the way brings the recognition that the eye of me and the eye of you are one and the same eye. And that's what I was experiencing. The I am, is the I am that you are, because this is the I am that God is, and God is the I am, which is the I am of you and the I am of me. Therefore, the recognition of I am-ness is the way. There is only one I am, and that I am is universal, individually manifested and expressed as every individual past, present, and future. I am is the way, and the more we dwell in the remembrance of our true identity, the closer we are living to the way. Yes, I found that when I was serving God through serving His creation, I had to get up every morning and remind myself of that fact. And I would say, Father, this is your day, a day that you have made. Show me where I can be of service. Give me the power to carry it out. Relieve me of the bondage of self so I can better do your will. And that's what was happening. And that dying was the most beautiful period I've ever lived through. So finally he says, the goal of mysticism is the attainment of the realization of oneself as self, capital S, so that life is a continuing experience of the self, with the coming down to the personal sense of self only for the purpose of the immediate work to be done. Yes, I used to be on the job working in a factory, and as I said, I think it was last week, I found a way to be consciously aware of the presence all the time. And I would get lost in my work, and next time I looked up, a couple hours has passed, and I would remind myself again, take a breath, let it out, thy will be done. And I was praying without ceasing, but it was so simple to do. And so we get up in the morning and we remind ourselves. He says, the attainment of the mystical estate is, of course, the ascension out of personal sense of life into the experience of life lived as the universal and the divine. I am is the way. I am is the life of me and the life of you. I am is the immortality of me and the immortality of you. I am is the divine grace by which we live. And this is the basis of all mysticism. And so that's chapter 12 in parenthesis in eternity called The Discovery of the Self. Now let's see if John has something to add to that. The book of John. Okay, so we're going to look into John chapter 12. We have this. And there were certain Greeks among them that came up to worship at the feast. These same Greeks came to Philip, and Philip cometh and telleth Andrew, and Andrew and Philip tell Jesus that the Greeks would see him. And Jesus answered, ah, the hour has come. Now, all the way through John, from the very beginning, when he tells his mother, woman, what have I to do with thee? Mine hour has not yet come. He is saying that all through these first 11 chapters. But then we get to the 12th chapter, and he says, not mine hour has not yet come. He says, my hour has come. Mine hour has come. Why? Because some Greeks show up. Well, he says, the hour is come that the Son of Man should be glorified. Jesus is in the process of rising out of the parenthesis. He's in the process of it. He tells us eventually later in John, I have overcome the world. Which means that he has completely risen out of the parenthesis into his true identity, which is what that chapter was about, of Joel's. Jesus says, verily, verily, I say unto you, except a corn of wheat fall into the ground and die, it abideth alone. But if it die, it bringeth forth much fruit. He that loveth his life shall lose it. Yes, even if you have perfect health, and you're quite wealthy, and you've found the perfect spouse or partner, you will lose that. Because in this illusion in which we walk, it comes to an end. Or your spouse or partner or friend's life comes to an end. And if it doesn't come to an end on this plane, this illusory plane of existence, you experience yourself getting old and decrepit and can't walk, and maybe you get something real painful, arthritis or something, and it is devastating. You used to be able to run a 15-mile marathon, and now you're crippled up. So he who loves his life in this world will lose it. And he that hateth his life in this world shall keep his life unto life eternal. Now, you're not supposed to hate, love, anything. So he's not talking about hating or loving your life, your material sense of life. He's talking about loving your real identity. He is in the process, while he's teaching these people and walking around the countryside, he is in the process himself of rising out of the parenthesis. And he's doing it right in front of our eyes, so that those who took notes or later dictated could keep track of the whole thing. We would have it forever. An example of someone that completely died to self, was resurrected and ascended. We have the example forever. So he's in the process of doing what he's suggesting. If any man serve me, let him follow me. And where I am, there shall also my servant be. If any man serve me, him will my Father honor. Now that's what I was doing in my living room, serving the Christ within, helping old Ray out. And now he gets a little bit personal here. He says, "Now is my soul troubled. And what shall I say, Father? Save me from this hour? But for this cause came I unto this hour. Father, glorify thy name." Now he knew that when the Greeks showed up, that was, I can't remember how Herb said it, Herb Fitch, but I remember hearing him say something about when the Greeks showed up. The Greeks had mystery schools from way, way back, and they came to Jesus Christ to recognize the Christ. They were from the mystery school, so it was tying the whole thing together with a nice little bow, and it was also signaling Jesus that his time has come, his hour has come to glorify God by dying completely. So he says, "Father, glorify thy name." And then came a voice from heaven saying, "I have both glorified it and will glorify it again." Think about that. That's at least the second time that I know of. The first time was when he prayed for Lazarus. The voice is so loud coming out of his being that everyone standing around him hears it. It's a fourth dimensional experience showing us that his consciousness extended and included everybody around, so that when the voice came, they heard it too. Jesus says, "This voice came not because of me, but for your sakes. Now is the judgment of this world. Now shall the prince of this world be cast out." That's the human sense of life, or the human mind. "And I, if I be lifted up from the earth, will draw all men unto me." Now, you see, they hear the voice when they get in his presence and the voice speaks. They also feel the Christ when they're standing near him. They don't know what they're feeling, but that's what it is. And so the eye that is lifted up after the self has died, well, they ask him about it. What is this? What do you mean the Son of Man must be lifted up? And he answers somewhat like Joel does. You know, Joel answers questions the same way Jesus does. One time I said, Joel, what about this human self? How do I get it to stop doing this, that, and the other? And he looked at me and he said, you know, well, no, he didn't say that. He said, well, actually, you haven't got one. And he turned around and walked away. And there I am, standing with my mouth open. I just asked him how to get rid of this false self, and he said, you don't have one. Now, that's the way he answered questions. That's the same way Jesus answers questions. They ask him, who is this Son of Man that must be lifted up? And Jesus said unto them, yet a little while is the light with you. Walk while ye have the light. While you have the light, believe in the light, that ye may be the children of the light. So he's talking about walking in the light and not in the darkness. How does that answer the question, who's the Son of God that must be lifted up? The Son of Man. That's the way these people speak. They force you to go back in your temple and take it into meditation and find your own answers. Among the chief rulers, and many believed on him, but because of the Pharisees, they did not confess him. See, oh no, I'm not going to be thrown out of the synagogue. Yeah, lest they should be put out of the synagogue, right. For they love the praise of men more than the praise of God. Jesus cried and said, he that believeth on me believeth not on me, but on him that sent me. And here's another one that feels that he was sent. And he that seeth me seeth him that sent me. Okay, so he that seeth the true self, the Christ, that you've been feeling while you're standing in my presence, he says, that you've been hearing while you're listening to the voice, that you've been feeling when you felt lifted up. That's the true identity. And if you're seeing it, you are seeing him that sent it. For he himself and it are one. So he that seeth me seeth him that sent me. These two are one. And Joel feels that we are sent. And I guess I do too. I'm not as strong on it because I haven't had a scroll appear at the end of my bed and unfold and have the New Horizon written on it. But in my own way, I have the Spirit of God and the presence of God that makes itself known and tells me, you know, thank you for making these talks. And then I say back to that presence, thank you. And I guess we have a mutual or a common ground in love for one another because we're one. Okay, let's have a little meditation and see if there's anything else that needs to be said. Inside of you inside of me, not this physical body, there's another me. There's another you. And that you is incorporeal. It's not made of matter. It does not live in matter. It does not walk in matter. That you walks in the kingdom right here, right now. And in a moment ye think not, the kingdom is revealed. And from out of the kingdom comes a voice. And the voice says, "Know ye not that I am the presence of God? Know ye not that ye are the temple of God? Ye are the temple of I. And I have come that you might have life, and life more abundantly. Every good and perfect gift. You don't earn it. There's nothing to earn. Who can earn? Who can earn themselves? Can you earn yourself? No. It's already yours. I gave it to you. I, at the foundation of the world. You know you existed before the world was, and you will exist after the world ends. And you will exist when time shall be no more. This is all your true identity. This is all I within you. Your consciousness, your conscious awareness is infinite. There are no limitations, no borders. It goes on and on forever in every direction. And as you know the self, as you feel the self, you are lifting up the I. This is lifting up the Son of Man into the Son of God. This is where you leave behind your childish games. This is where you become a servant of the Most High. And more than that, says Christ, you become a friend, my friend. And so I say unto you, friend, incorporeal, infinite self, I, Christ, will never leave you nor forsake you. I am in you. You are in I. And we two are one. One. And so rest here. There remaineth a rest to the sons of God. Are you the Son of God? Yes. Yes, when you have lifted up the Son of Man, now are we the sons of God. And so we rest here in the cool shade of the presence. Our wandering is over. There's nowhere we need to go to get truth. For truth is our very own being within, and we rest in this truth. I am that I am. All that I have is thine. All that I am is I. Be not afraid. I am here. I am come that you might have life. And that life is infinite. And that life is eternal. And that life is everlasting. And that life is invisible. And that life envelops you. Abide in my life, and my life abides in you. And so, that is chapter 12. And I want to thank you for drawing that out of me. And I want to thank you for being here to listen, to be receptive, so that you might receive him whom to know aright is life eternal. My friend, I thank you. I love you. I am you.